Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. There are now more people living in poverty in the United States of America than there has been in 52 years. On the official poverty rolls, that means a family of four, $22,400 worth of family of four, living on that kind of money, has gone up another 2.6 million people. And so what this has done is this sends shockwaves through some of the established world and the rest of us as well, because it means that things are worse than people thought. It means that the recession that hit this country, the financial crisis of this country that began with the dot-com bust and now the financial crisis and what may be coming next, has taken more Americans and hit more Americans at the middle and lower class ladders of our economic social existence and hit them hard. The poverty line in 2010 for a family of four is $22,314. So think about that. 15.1% of the people, but many people say that's even, I argue all the time with many guests here on one side or the other, that that's too low to even think about. Think about raising a family of four on $30,000, on $32,000. If that's the case, we're talking about 60 million people in this country or more. So we have two guests with us here to kind of wrestle with this with us all. Number here is 410-319-8888, or write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Joining us, once again, it's been a while. I have not had him since he's got his new job, is Diedrich Mohammed, who is now Senior Director of the NAACP's Economic Department in Washington, D.C. Diedrich, great to have you back.
Yeah, it's great to be back on.
Good to hear your voice. Tiffany Williams is with us. She is Project Coordinator and Advocacy Director for the Break the Chain campaign at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she's also a social worker. And Tiffany, welcome to the show. It's good to have you with us as well.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So, Diedrich, I mean, this is something that grabbed the headlines because it's monumental. I mean, what the malaise that people feel in this country, the that's too kind of a word. I mean, of people falling deeply into poverty. This is a crisis. And I don't think people in the government really understand the kind of crisis we're facing.
No, I think you're right. And I think even sometimes the headlines might even miss some of the large picture. I think it's very important. I mean, I'm glad that finally we're having some focus on, you know, poorer people and those in poverty, and we're seeing that they're in worse conditions. But also, you know, this report by the Census Bureau was looking at income, poverty, and health insurance. And, you know, it was showing, too, that just overall Americans, the Economic Policy Institute was calling this decade the lost decade, with a decrease overall in income for all Americans at 10%. And we have such a crazy economic dynamic now where the poorer you are, the more you lost in proportion to your income during the Great Recession. So it's just the poor literally are getting poorer at a much faster rate. And so the pain that all Americans are feeling, you keep going down the economic scale and you see it gets worse and worse.
And Tiffany Williams, as an activist, but also as a social worker, I'd like to hear your thoughts on what you were thinking as you read these reports coming out the last day.
Yeah, I think you really hit it on the head, actually, in your opening about how these numbers are really shocking. They're really high, record levels. But in fact, they don't even show the real need. They also don't talk about how important the safety net really is for keeping people out of poverty. You know, I work in D.C., so I hear jargon all day long, even at my own place of work, which, as you know, is a pretty progressive place.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a social worker, but my head starts to really fuzz up when people start throwing terms around that seem to be up on the chopping block, like entitlement. You know, entitlements save lives. I heard this a lot when I was working in New York, and something that I have personal experience with, which is single moms working two, even three jobs in order to pay their rent, utilities, a car payment, medicine, maybe groceries. And if the car doesn't break down, if nobody gets sick, then maybe they'll get a Christmas tree this year, but maybe not. And these poverty numbers, you know, $22,000 for a family of four, as you know, is so incredibly low. And the census report also, it showed that a third of our population is living on a low income, and they define that as two times the federal poverty line, which is only $44,000. And so the numbers of actual need, that the sort of picture of need, the lives that people live every day, aren't really reflected when people say the word poverty, when they think about the word poverty. In Baltimore, in D.C., everywhere in America, you think about the guy on the corner holding the cup out as what you think of when you think of poverty, but we're not talking about the cashier, we're not talking about the clerk at the Starbucks or whatever. We're not talking about the secretaries. My mom is a secretary. We live well below our needs. So I think these numbers are really shocking, and it's something to think about. But it really doesn't even show the entire picture of need in this country.
And I think that folks would like you to join us here at 410-319-8888, because there are many of us out here who have in our families live on $40,000 or less a year. And that sounds like a lot of money. I mean, it sounds like, you know, when you first get a job, my God, $40,000 a year. But when you, it might be okay for a single person living by themselves.
Sure.
But when you're talking about a family trying to exist on that income, and paying what food costs and paying what housing costs, paying for transportation, clothing your kids.
Christmas presents, birthday presents. I mean, it's all student loans, credit card debt. There's so many different categories in our budget that people don't think about. You know, this poverty line was created in the 60s. It sort of is based on the cost of food, which at that time really was the most important thing. But now we know that the most important thing in Baltimore and D.C. and metro areas is housing, and that's not really accounted for the way that they measure poverty now.
So, Deidre, where would you put poverty in America? And how do you define poverty? How do you define it?
Well, I mean, you know, I oftentimes will use – I mean, also let's highlight as well that we're looking, you know, strictly at income poverty. And, you know, and I've done – when I was used to work at IPS and – I used to work with Tiffany and mm-hmm. still as we work at the NAACP, we also look at wealth poverty, because we're talking about all these things that we were to, you know, like spending our income on. But ideally, and not ideally, like the way what you want is you want to be able to put aside some money for savings. And so when there are economic hard times, and as we're in an economy with increasingly growing economic insecurity, that you need to have some type of savings to fall back on. And so, I mean, that's something else that should be set aside. So, Mark, I think you're absolutely right. $40,000, though that's nowhere near the poverty level, almost doubles the poverty level, would still keep most Americans in asset poverty. And as we're talking about, or as the political discourse is about cutting away social investments, entitlement programs that can help provide some type of security for Americans, I think we're kind of walking farther and farther off a ledge where we are kind of where we can permanently destabilize the American middle class economy, which is built on savings, which is built on not having a wage out of poverty, but having a living wage where you could save and where you didn't have to go in massive debt just to continue with your lifestyle. And honestly, that's what we've been doing for the last 20 years. I mean, this problem isn't just the Great Recession. The Great Recession has accelerated it, but we've really been in a 30-year decline in terms of sustainable wages for most Americans.
And when you think about what we're talking about here, then we'll open the phones at 410-319-8888. Very curious what my listeners feel about all this and what you think should be done and what you think is going on in America. I think that had a lot to do with why in this city and cities across the country the voter turnout was so low in some of the elections that took place. That officially there are 46 million Americans, that's one in six, living below the official poverty line. That's who said it's $22,000 for a family of four and $11,000 for a single person in terms of income. $11,000 a year. Even trying to imagine living on $22,000 a year by yourself.
And also, Mark, if I could add that if you add over 23, almost 25 million more Americans, if you rely on either an unemployment check or Social Security check to keep them out of poverty. So we could hit almost 70 million Americans who are living in poverty or one government paycheck away from living in poverty, even though the poverty threshold is so low. And that really should be stunning.
410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mark.
Hi, Leo. Welcome.
I want to respond to your guests in thusly. I'm a Social Security recipient, so entitlements are important to me. But I would suggest to you, and you're a longtime activist as well as myself, there was at one time a so-called war on poverty in this country. Jobs subsequently have been sent overseas, manufacturing jobs, technical jobs, all kinds of jobs have been sent overseas. We are being held hostage. When I talk about poor blacks and poor whites, and of course the middle class has been added to the group that are being enslaved in this country and throughout the world by the corporate elite. So it is a conscious and deliberate effort to enslave the peoples of the world, not the least of whom reside in the United States of America. The not-for-profit giants, whether they be Johns Hopkins University or others in this country, not-for-profits, are getting away with murder. And the war on poverty has become a joke in the context of where we are today. There is no intent to do right. And I'm glad your listeners, some of your listeners, as well as your guests, have sincerity about their motives. I believe they're sincere. But you're going to have to go to war with the people who would enslave you. Don't forget the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower talked about. That's real, alive, and well in America today. And the Republican and Democratic parties are both supporting, both parties are supporting the enslavement of the people of this country, in my judgment.
Hmm. Tiffany, you want to grab a hold of that one?
Sure. Well, I will.
Go ahead, Tiffany.
Okay, I'll go first. Well, I'll say that the numbers really do show that the job loss is really where the problem is. And so we do need to create really good jobs here and good, living wage jobs that people don't need public benefits to actually live on. You know, I work with direct care workers who provide some of the most important care that we need for seniors and people with disabilities, and 46% of them have to turn to public benefits in order to make ends meet, even if they're working full time. So to end poverty, we really need to create good jobs. And I think the listener really hits on a good point, which is the priorities in our country for spending are really skewed. You know, cutting the military budget and ending the wars would create plenty of revenue to create good jobs and even do more than that. How can we be out there engaging in never-ending wars when 25% of our own kids in this country are living in poverty? So I think, you know, your listener made a really good point.
Duke Muhammad?
Yeah, and I'll just add that, I think one positive piece, I do think that President Obama's job plan, American Jobs Act, is a step in the right direction. It is not at all enough to turn around the regressive economic nature that's been happening for the last 30 years. But I do believe it is a step in the right direction. In the proposal, it's asking to continue unemployment insurance. It is setting aside some funds for infrastructure, job programs, as well as asking that this be paid for with a more progressive tax system. I think those are all small steps in the right direction. But to deal with the problem that we've been dealing with the last 30 years of concentration of wealth, of growing insecurity for middle and working class Americans, we're going to have to take steps, probably leaps and bounds beyond that, to really deal with the proportion of this crisis.
I mean, when you look at where we're headed, I'm just curious. I mean, not to be a pessimist, but what is happening here in America? I mean, it seems we're living in a world now where people can expect to do less well than their parents. For the first time in history, and even in the days of dire poverty of the 40s, 50s, and racist segregation that existed in that period, what was different was the hope, the sense that things can get better. I have a feeling that we're in a different place about where all that is now and where people are. You can feel it. I think people are feeling in some ways things coming apart at the seams.
I'll start off with that. I think the very last two decades of the 20th century, I think, we already saw movements toward greater concentration of wealth. We saw the declining manufacturing industry, but things that helped cover that was increasing two wage earners in a household, increasing diversity, and so it wasn't quite clear what was happening to median wages. And then I think in the 90s and up until arguably maybe the Great Recession, we were hiding a lot of our ability, our life. We were hiding the challenges we were facing economically with debt. It was unsustainable debt. And now I think this is kind of crashing all around us and is really highlighting the need that America has to rebuild an economy that could help create a middle class, because
because what did do that in the 40s and 50s is no longer around in this kind of globalized society and also in a very deregulated marketplace. And so now we're at a very tough point where we have to kind of create the new American middle class, and hopefully for the first time it'll truly be a racially inclusive middle class.
Tiffany?
People just don't, they don't talk about poverty. You know, are the sort of politicians out there, with the exception of John Edwards, who, you know, we know what happened with his campaign, they're not out there inspiring hope and specifically naming poverty. We're talking about creating jobs in the middle class, but what we're seeing now is more and more people are becoming part of this underworld of people living in poverty, people who are depending on food stamps and Medicaid to make ends meet and are starting to realize that they are in that class now. And so, you know, we see that the CEO pay and corporate tax loopholes and military spending are starting to rile people up and starting to get people to sort of see, you know, hey, this is wrong. These people are not paying their fair share. Meanwhile, I can't even afford a box of macaroni and cheese. And so, you know, I have hope. You may be a pessimist, but I do have hope that we'll start to sort of rally against this huge inequality that we're seeing. And the inequality numbers are borne out. And even in this census report, the number shows that inequality is growing, both in income and racial and ethnic disparities are also widening. So I think, I mean, I hope that people will be starting to get riled up about this.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Mike, you're on the air.
I want to commend your last guest for putting forward hope. Keep hope alive, Mark. You're old enough to remember that. But I'd like to talk more, not about hope, but what has to be done with this broken economy. This is not a recent development. I remember sometime in the 1990s, reading Jeremy Rifkin's book, The End of Work. The jobs that have been lost are not going to be recreated by any ingenious policy proposal from either party. I mean, to play off the Republicans and against the Democrats, we will watch our children get poorer and poorer. We need something else. This economic system is broken, and people got to replace it. We need a cooperative society where we can take care of each other, whether it makes profit for the wealthy or not. Take their damn wealth and use it to take care of ourselves.
Mike, thank you. And let's talk a bit about some of what Mike just said. I've had a series of conversations on this show about capitalism, because they're putting the word on the table. Just like people don't like to talk about poverty. We never want to mention the word poverty. The candidates are loath to mention the word poverty. It's only the middle class, but we're terrified of poverty because of what it makes you sound like. But then is capitalism capable of reforming itself? Can it change what we're facing? I mean, and that's probably we've had discussion with people here, both who are in the financial industry, capitalists, people who are opposing that, people who are unionists, other thinkers. And I think that's a discussion we have to have. Can this system answer these questions?
Well, I wouldn't look toward capitalism or, you know, capitalists or what have you as the people who are going to, or the forces that's going to kind of reform this system. I would look at democracy and at grassroots movements and organizing. I think that is actually what built the American middle class, as problematic as it was, with racial exclusion, with horrible sexism, these types of things. But nonetheless, the American middle class didn't just happen because people believed in free market. They fought because of, it occurred due to a lot of organizing, labor organizing and fighting in politics to demanded that people be taken care of and that there be a greater and more fair distribution of wealth. And I think, again, that is what we're going to have to look at. And, you know, 2012 is going to be a very political year, and it's incumbent upon all of us to really be engaged in this political action if we really want to move our economy and our country forward.
Tiffany, you want to leap into that for a minute?
Well, it's no surprise that Diedrich and I agree on that and on the importance of community organizing and democracy, and particularly ensuring, you know, full participation in our government system in democracy. I'm not going to say that I'm not a huge cynic when it comes to the two-party system in our country, and it does take me a while to get up the nerve to go vote, but that doesn't keep me from it doesn't keep me from the passion that I feel about community organizing and what your caller said about taking care of each other. I think that's a really good point. You know, taking care of our of each other in our communities, leveraging that power that we have, even if we don't have financial power, we have people power. And as far as reform of our democracy or capitalism goes, I think one of the most important things that we can do is eliminate barriers that keep poor people from participating in our democracy system. You know, requiring IDs and other things that we know keep people from being able to participate, and other things that sort of make democracy not work for the poor, but that things that could be reformed without overhauling the entire system.
Clarence, you're on the air.
My call. I want to make this so it makes sense to what I want your guests to help me with this and yourself. How do you legislate the greed out of capitalism? Mm. Is there a way that would be part of what I see as the problem? Legislate it, the greed out of capitalism, and make it where the foremost important thing in the system would be the sustention of the society that it exists in, equitable for all. And another point I wanted to make was that in a couple of your last shows, you touched on all of the things that I see as the cause of this problem we're facing now, the attack on the unions. And whereas one time in this country, basically a person with a 12th grade education could work at a place like Chevrolet and earn a living where he could live next door to the doctor and so forth. All of these things, as I see, is what has brung us to this point. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think Clarence makes a strong point. We have just a few minutes left. I mean, who would like to kind of start that off? Diedrich or Tiffany?
I'll start off. Yeah, I mean, you can't kind of get greed out of capitalism. What you can do is you can put forth better regulations that can help inhibit people's desire for greed and it overrunning the common good. I mean, it was in the past. We used to have a top-tier tax rate at much higher the level than it is today. We used to have, even about 30 years ago, we used to have much more stronger regulation on the finance industry, and I think the creation of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is a step in that right direction. We have to take some leaps and bounds beyond that to make sure it has teeth, and so we don't have an economy running on toxic assets. You know, and I think, you know, one of the things we're trying to do at the NAACP with our economic program is we're trying to work with the population at large. I think a lot of people just kind of don't feel like they have the knowledge or the ability to truly engage in these issues. And so we're working on financial and economic education to help people look at in their communities, in their own lives, and in the larger political sense, you know, what things can be done to help make our society a society that has more shared prosperity. Because this country still is a very wealthy country. And one of the great problems is a great concentration of wealth. It's not that there's no wealth in this country anymore. A large part of the problem is it's so concentrated.
And Tiffany, you want to close out with a thought?
Sure. I think your caller makes a good point and something I personally agree with, which is the sort of attack on workers and the unions and basically just blaming the poor people, which is not new, but blaming people in poverty for being there, you know, saying that they need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. But we know now that the bootstraps just aren't there. It's not something that people can just sort of change anymore. So I think that we do need to really change the way that we're looking at the poor and how we think that if they're responsible or not and what we can sort of do to make sure that we actually help people. So,
Tiffany Williams is a project coordinator and advocacy director for the Break the Chain campaign at the Institute for Policy Studies. She's also a social worker. Diedrich Mohammed is a senior director of the NAACP Economic Department. And National NAACP working out of Washington, D.C. And Diedrich and Tiffany, thank you both so much for being part of the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good to have
you
both.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Take care. We'll talk soon. And thank you all for writing, calling in, and making the show what it is, and bringing your interesting thoughts to the airwaves. I'll remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily contents on arts, food, culture, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cricket Aronson and Justin Levy. Our intern today is Liz Walker. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.